Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Oral Presentations Podcast. This is episode 72, and it's called If Genies and the Hope Diamond Had a Baby, Ernest Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises. How have you guys been? This public episode was supposed to be out on maybe Monday or Wednesday. That's usually when publics go out. But I've been doing stand-up and hanging out at a club for stand-up for the last maybe 8 days straight, you know? Which is not an excuse. You still can read a book in that point in time. Like, you can still get a book done there. But, and I don't really know how to describe this, live stand-up energy. Like, if you're listening to this and you've ever been to a stand-up show where you left and you were like, man, that was worth my ticket price and I had a great time. My face hurts from laughing, man. That was such a good decision to go out to. If you've gone there as an audience member like that, I've been at those kind of shows for the last 8 days or so as either somebody who's part of it or somebody who knows somebody who's running the show. And that enhances how fun that can be. If I'm on a show, especially if I know everybody, and I've known them for years, and I'm excited to see them crush. Because outside of my 20s, competition kind of falls off. I don't know, if you're young and you're listening to this, and you're still in your 20s, and you're like, I gotta go, like, I totally understand. That was my entire 20s. Ever since I graduated high school, I was super competitive about whatever I was doing. But I'm not sure when this happened. At a certain point in time, it's like, all right, well, let's just maintain and try to chill out a little bit, man. You know, and every now and then you get caught up in some fun that you're too old for, you know? You're like, I'm going to be hurting for like a week after this, dude. But whatever. But mostly, you kind of cool off a little bit, at least me. If you're a young person listening to this, I'm not sure what your life is. I'm not trying to tell you how to live or anything like that. But for me, I cooled off when I hit like 32, and I'm 34 now. And it's mostly just like, hey, how are you? Because all my friends are about my same age, and they're all weathered in a way that I don't think any of them ever expected. And so it's like the idea of competition is like, will you chill, dude? Like, if somebody's still going hard when they're 34 or anywhere over 30, it's like, all right, well, something broke in there, I think. At least that's my theory on it. Now, what the episode's about is Ernest Hemingway's first novel. He published it in 1926, and it is about, I'm still not sure, you know? I wish I could tell you. I'm taking an INC on this one. This is an incomplete. We're going to walk through the first seven chapters, and I couldn't give this book one more minute of my life. I'm sorry. And, you know, I'm not proud of that. I read the first seven, and I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm done with this, dude. That's it, dude. Let me down on this one. But here's the thing. I love The Old Man and the Sea, dude. I love Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea. That book will bust me up. Like, I don't know if I could do an episode about it because it would be, I don't know, it would be like Animal Farm, but way more. Like, I've never cared about the book Animal Farm. And then when I did that one on 13, that thing busted me up. When they had to take Boxer away, when the horse got sold out, and the donkey couldn't break him out. He couldn't save his friend. That busted me up doing it. You know, even thinking about it now, it's a very sad part of that book. The Old Man and the Sea, the whole thing is liable to bust me up, and I'm not really sure when. Like, the relationship with the boy, how he goes out, how he cuts his hands, how he's bleeding all over the place, but he still needs energy to try to take this fish in, how nobody believes in him in that book. Everybody thinks he's just an unlucky old man the whole time, but in his mind, he still goes out and he tries to get that, and he gets an opportunity to do it. He gets the fish on a line, and it's the struggle of his life to bring it back. I love that book so much. I've listened to it, I can't tell you how many times. I used to fall asleep to that thing, at least in college, after I calmed down, because when I first went to Westchester, I was running with the devil. That was not a smart way to live. I was overwhelmed with how exciting things could be. And then there was a shift after my first year at Westchester where I kind of stopped talking to everybody and just was working at a gym. The guy who owned the gym could box. He played international rugby. And I learned from, like, I learned as much as I could from that dude. And I kind of stopped hanging out at college. But The Old Man and the Sea does not disappoint. Does not disappoint. I listened to it last night just to make sure I still appreciate what this guy makes. But man, this one, and it's Hemingway's first novel. I feel weird saying that I couldn't finish it, man. It's just not for me. I can't. And I'm not trying to disparage him. I read the stuff that his sons wrote about this book. And I looked up the book. So I read the first 7 chapters, right? And I was like, this is the... I don't want to even... It's hard to disparage Ernest Hemingway because I love The Old Man and the Sea so much. But this book, The Sun Also Rises, dude, this is an episode of Dawson's Creek. As far as I know, this is the OC, dude. This is just drama. The Jersey Shore, who's doing what? You're going over here. This lady's blacked out again. Who's attractive? And I think if I would have read it when I was 16 or 18, I would have loved the idea of living in Paris, you know? But this might be the first book I've done on this podcast where it's really important that I'm kind of older now, because I think I missed the window to read this thing and really enjoy it. I don't know, but I'm insecure because that's what a dumb guy says. And the whole point of this podcast is trying to learn new things, trying to accept stuff that out the gate, I'm like, I'm not sure if I like that or not. I don't know. The whole point of me doing this is that I don't shy away from things that I think might suck, because that was a pattern in my life that I didn't like, that I knew was happening. After 30, I stopped asking questions about things, and I somehow became a dude who thought he knew stuff. Everything. Anything was going to be good or bad. I thought I knew what it was going to be, so I stopped having new experiences. I just started, you know, just kind of playing my heels a little bit, being like, I know the world. And the whole point of this podcast is that that's not who I want to be moving forward after I finish 100. I would like to think that I would be a person who's like, all right, you ask a question or two, you see what's going on. Maybe you read that book. See if it sucks like you think it's going to suck. And if it does, I don't know, why do you think it sucks? Especially if it's a great classic book that everybody online... Dude, The Guardian, which is like I think it's like a British CNN. I'm not really sure what The Guardian... I'm almost positive it's a British CNN. They rank The Sun Also Rises as the 53rd best book ever written in the history of people. I looked all this up after I read the first 7 chapters and had some opinions formed that felt like dumb guy opinions of like, all right, well, what am I doing here? I don't know how to describe this book without being super negative. And that's another thing I don't like to do on this podcast, is go super negative on something, you know? So here's what I'm saying. Ernest Hemingway is a guy. All I know him as is The Old Man and the Sea. It's one of my favorite books. It's a guaranteed cry if I listen to it at all times, if I put that thing on, and I can't tell you when it's going to get me, but I love that book. So when I did The Sun Also Rises, I was like, I'm going to love this. You know, things fall apart, man. You know, things don't work out. And look, I gave it a whack, but I'll take an INC on this one. I picked the topic because of the ER nurse on my second trip from pneumonia in March. Cause I took March off. There wasn't a new episode. I got pneumonia bad up front in March. And then the antibiotics. They put me on the steroids or whatever. I don't know what they gave me. They might have been Tic Tacs because they didn't do shit, dude. I had like 2 weeks where I was all right. But even, and then it came back with such a fury. Like I was like coughing up blood the second time worse and being like, this is not, I'm going back. So the second time I went to the ER, I was talking to the nurse and I was pretty nervous about the COVID test they gave me and what's going on. Like they put me I had my own room in the emergency room and it was pretty big, which scared me because I was like, yo, they don't give rooms like this to people if you sprain your wrist. Like this is, I'm not sure how bad what I have is, but this room looks like I'm like patient zero for 28 days later. So I was pretty freaked out, man. But I brought the red badge of courage when I went the second time because I knew that it was time to get an episode done, and assuming that my lungs don't fold up and collapse or become some sort of thing that grows a bunch of things inside of it and can't breathe anymore, I'm going to do another episode, you know? So I brought the red badge of courage, and as I was in that giant room that was so big that it was definitely scary, I'm like, oh no, I don't know what I have, but these rooms go to people who are having problems. I was reading RBOC, dude, or TRBOC, whatever you want to call it. And so the nurse I had asked me, hey, what are you reading? And I didn't tell her about the podcast. I was just like, hey, I was, you know, I'm kind of concerned at, you know, what I know moving forward. I'm 34. I should probably know some more things. So I'm just trying to read the literature that was assigned to me in high school. That I didn't read. I just lied about or asked questions afterwards or did the test based upon context clues and just hope and prayed it and crossed my fingers and toes and got out of there with a B+, pretty much. So I told her that and she was like, oh, that's interesting because I've read Ernest Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises. I don't even know how many times in my life, over 10. It's one of my favorite books, and I love it. So I wrote The Sun Also Rises on the inside cover of so the way a book is with the pages in the middle, you know, you got the front cover, you got the back cover. When she told me Ernest Hemingway, The Sun Also Rises in that emergency room, using my left hand, because I was using my right hand to keep the mask on to do a treatment, because they would have albuterol treatments. If you don't have asthma, I have asthma. A albuterol inhaler is like an oh no inhaler, so you got to hit that twice. When you go to the hospital for pneumonia the second time and they know you were there 3 weeks ago, they put a ton of that inhaler stuff in some sort of breathing device, and then you hold the thing on your face and you suck in as much of that gas as you can. So I was doing that, so I wrote it with my left hand on the back cover of my copy of the Red Badge of Courage has The Sun Also Rises written in it with my left hand really scribbly because I knew I wanted to do this episode because she was so cool and I was pretty nervous and we had great conversation and I was like, this book's gotta be good. And man, I'm telling you, there's only one other topic that beat my ass like this, and it was space time. I tried to do space time at the end of 2019 for an early episode, and I couldn't understand what was going on there. Once they were talking about how speed makes time slower, my number one question was like, okay, so if you work out and do like pull-ups, are you infinite? Like, do you last forever? And I have nobody to ask that stuff to. Like, yo, space-time wrecked me. But it was a technical topic, a different type of topic than this one. This topic, this book, man, I gotta tell you, it read like the Jersey Shore. It's a teen drama. This is an episode of Dawson's Creek, at least for the first 7 chapters. Allegedly, they go see bulls at some point, and then some other shit happens. Good luck. I wish you luck. We're not gonna cover that. That's after chapter 7, and I can't help you there. Make it up. If you ever get in a conversation with somebody about this book, and they're talking about how beautiful it is, just know in your head, this is an episode of the Jersey Shore, dude. So we're going to go through chapters 1 through 7. But real quick, before we do that, so this book was published in 1926. It was Hemingway's first novel. I looked up When the Old Man and the Sea was written 1953. So this is, it was, after learning that, it was easy to picture this as like, all right, well, this is first thing, man. He had to get paid somehow. You got to make something popular. I understand. It's fun. And it's about allegedly the Roaring Twenties and how life was kind of inconsequential, at least in Europe after World War One. That's what this book's about. Is there's also a subplot of emasculation, the idea of like women dominating men in relationships, and promiscuity's highlighted in the book as well. Now, I cannot tell you that I got that out of my own brain from reading seven chapters. Dude, I read seven chapters and I was like, I'm done, and I don't know what that's about. Also, I'm not used to absorbing this type of information. This whole book is just high school gossip drama so far in seven chapters. It's high school drama with a number of different players. I probably missed a few, if I'm being honest. We're going to run through the basic plot, but I definitely missed something. I was baffled most of the time reading this and upset with myself because I blame myself. People call this, again, The Guardian, 53rd best book ever. If I'm not getting it, it's a me problem, man. And maybe that's why it's taken an extra couple of days to be able to record this, because I didn't want to come on here and just trash it because I'm insecure about genuinely being a dumb dude. So to come on here and be like, anyway, Hemingway's early stuff was garbage, let me tell you. I don't want a recording of that available on the internet. Especially because I'm sure I missed something. I had to have missed what's important to this, because mostly it feels like rich people getting hammered in Paris 24/7 and not caring about each other. So, aside from that, I also looked into why I might not really enjoy this book at this point in time in my life. So check this out. So we did The Red Badge of Courage last week, right? Totally different tone of the book. Main character, the whole thing was about his mental state and being in the Civil War. And it's really descriptive, ton of analogies. He kept talking about dragons when he was scared. All of that, really rich and interesting to read. Now, the way apparently Hemingway's style, which I have no idea. I didn't know what the hell are you talking about, style? Just tell me what's going on in the book. I don't know. Give me the story, right? But after I finished the seven chapters, I had to look into why I might hate it. So I found this thing called iceberg theory, and Hemingway coined this term. Iceberg theory is about minimalist writing, which made sense when I learned about it, because in this book, there's not those really beautiful floral analogies about, like in Red Badge of Courage, when he was scared, he looked across and he saw those campfires and the Confederate soldiers, and he was like, ah, it's like a serpent, it's like a dragon, da-da-da. Like, I'm not doing it justice, but he had an ornate way of describing his own fear in his mind. Iceberg theory, in the style that Hemingway writes, is just flat. Like, he'll have sentences that are like, it made me feel bad. And so I that might be it, because I'm not a big reader before this podcast. So maybe the juxtaposition between reading The Red Badge of Courage and how compelling that was with analogies and all sorts of like interesting things. And this book was almost planned to be the opposite. Because I looked all this up, like Hemingway wrote it with iceberg theory is what it's called. And it's meant to be totally superficial. The point of this book is that it was a whole lost generation after World War One, and people did not know what to do. They couldn't enjoy themselves. Nobody had real friends. They were just living how they're living, pleasurable, and just indulging in whatever they had, because everybody was lost. And after I found that out, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's why I don't care about it. That's fine. Because the last book I read, I cared about so much. And this one is written and designed, and the actual purpose behind it, apparently, is that you had a whole lost generation after World War One. And so when Hemingway wrote it, he wrote it to display the lifestyle that he was living at the time, which is 1920s Paris, pre-stock market crash. So everybody's just getting lit up 24/7, making some money off of something, and nobody cares about each other. When I was initially reading it, that's what it sounded like, and I couldn't believe how little I cared about any of these interactions. Like, I'm looking down at the notes. We're about to go through 1 through 7. And then good luck if you want to find the end. I hear they fight bulls. I bet that's great. This book's not getting one more minute of my life, dude. And it may have beaten me like Space Time beat me. I'm not sure. Maybe our last episode, maybe 100 is going to be part 2 of The Sun Also Rises, because it really bothers me that I can't get behind this book and enjoy it, especially with the recommendation coming from the ER nurse. I really thought I'd enjoy it, but man, just not for me. Not for me. It's your first thing. You got to publish a book. You get paid. The guy who wrote The Great Gatsby, I found out, put on Ernest Hemingway, because Hemingway was a writer of news articles and stuff before this. This is his first proper actual novel. So I'm not going to judge it that hard. Like, it's like, okay, great. Well, you got to start somewhere, man. But this thing definitely reads like, if you're around my age, do you remember going into like a Caldor or a Bradley's or a Boscov's when you were young, and then the bookshelves they had? You know, there was that section where, I don't know who these books were for, but the cover was like the most sexy dude you could ever imagine, like Fabio with a white shirt open with long hair, and there's a breeze going. And then there's some lady clinging on to his torso and a horse in the background somehow. This reads like that, man. This reads like some sort of beach novel about romance. And I know it's supposed to be more important than that, but I do not have the capacity to understand it. So, look, it is what it is. I'll take an INC on this one. I hope you guys had a nice week at work, and I'm really happy to get this out as you're driving home. So let's go through, you know? Hemingway, The Sun Also Rises. If you ever get in a conversation about this and somebody, this is their favorite book, it is a soap opera, dude. It is a daytime soap opera. And I'm not used to digesting those kind of stories. When I made these notes, there's 9 different colors because that's how many characters. I didn't know who to care about. And I didn't care about any of them. But I had to at least write the story down correctly to be able to tell you guys. So let's get it done. Let's go through it with Hemingway. If you got a second to enjoy a piece of classic literature, I would not recommend this book at all. I would recommend The Old Man and the Sea, and if I'm being picky, go with the Charlton Heston version, the audiobook version, online, fall asleep to it. I don't know if you're like me, but that might bust you up, man. That's one of my favorite things to listen to. But hey, let's check it out. Ernest Hemingway's early stuff, huh? What'd you write about, Ern? Let's figure it out. Also, this book was not burned. It was banned in Boston in 1930 and Ireland in 1953 for content, because the whole thing is just people getting hammered and being mean to each other. And then there's some promiscuity. I mean, all over the novel. The idea is that this is a totally, you know, it's a lost generation. And so that's why the book got banned. But let's get it done. And I hope you had a great week at work, man. Or wherever you're doing. If you're listening to this right now and you're driving home, I hope you had a nice time getting it done this week. You know, because I've really enjoyed doing stand-up, being around stand-up, being around the energy of it. Just real quick. Yo, so I saw Bobby Kelly and Rich Voss do a mashup on Tuesday night that I didn't know was going to happen. Can I tell you how exciting that is? Those dudes have known each other forever, and they're some of the highest level comedians I can think of. And you could see the friendship between them when they were talking shit. Man, was that fun. How am I going to go home and keep reading this book about, it's a plot line from the OC after that. I only got excited for more stand-up after that. Woo! All right, I don't think this is a planned bit, so I'm not burning anybody's material, but one of the things that happened when Voss and Bobby Kelly were on stage together is that they were talking about food relapses, and Bobby Kelly was talking about how his wife catches him every now and then when he has a problem with his weight and he's eating a ton of chips, you know? And so Voss is making fun of him. They're just going back and forth. It's two genuine friends that have known each other for, I don't know, 30 years. And they've done stand-up the whole time. So Bobby Kelly's trying to talk about food relapses. And Voss is on stage with him with a mic of his own. And so Kelly asked Voss, like, hey, so, you know, when you eat too much, what do you eat? And Voss didn't miss a beat at all. I have no idea how long he had this chambered. But he was like, I don't know. I go with, like, candies a lot of the time. Like, I'll eat, like, a lot of funny bones and fall asleep. And Bobby Kelly jumped on it and was like, what is a funny bone? What is that, an old-time candy? What, are you eating Charleston Chews from 1903? Funny bones, right? And Voss was like, yeah, you wouldn't know what a funny bone is because you don't have any of them in your body. Oh! Yeah, set him up and knocked him down, dude. So funny. And Bobby Kelly started busting up laughing. The whole audience had such a great time, man. Meanwhile, I'm over here being like, am I just too dumb to understand the sun also rises? Because that may be the case. But, whew. God, these two dudes are professionals. If they're around your town, I would highly recommend going to see Bobby Kelly or Voss, whichever one is around you, because, man, was that impressive. Anyway, the sun also rises. Here we go, huh? Chapter one. What's this about, Hemingway? Let me know what's going on. All right. So, the book opens up, and you don't learn the narrator's name for a minute. The narrator, who is also based, like, this is the surrogate Hemingway character, because I looked up who was who when I was kind of in my head about, like, am I just an idiot who can't understand how excellent this book is? I looked up, like, all right, well, where did these characters come from, man? Who's who? What's doing, it was there, who is what? And Jake Barnes is our main character, who's also our narrator, who's also surrogate Hemingway. So, chapter one, we open up and the narrator is talking about his friend named Robert Cohen. Now, Robert Cohen, and it's described as his friend, he starts talking about how Robert Cohen was like a Jewish dude in Princeton, and he was getting, you know, he was having some hard times because there was anti-Semitic feelings over there. So when he was in Princeton, Robert Cohen decided, hey, fuck all that, and became a middleweight boxing champion. 154 pounds? That's not in the book, but that's what middleweight is, 154, I believe. I'm not sure if the weights were still the same back then, but current day, 154, and then you go up from there. Anyway, so Jake Barnes, our Hemingway character, is talking about his friend Robert Cohen. He's like, hey, when he was at Princeton, he was having a hard time, people fucking with him. He became the boxing champion. He got his nose broke hard. So Robert Cohen, as a character, looks like his nose got stepped on by a horse. And I only say that because later on in the same chapter, Jake Barnes, a.k.a. the Hemingway character, also backtalks his alleged friend and is like, I'm not really even sure if that shit ever happened, honestly. Maybe he just had like a problem where like a horse stepped on him. He might be lying the whole time. This is one of the problems I have with the book, is that nobody's actually friends, which I understand is supposed to drive home the point of the lost generation and nobody really knowing who they are and everybody kind of scrapping to get by. But out the gate, man, I was like, all right, well, you guys supposed to be friends? Why are you shit talking your friend like this, dude? I don't understand what's happening. Anyway, this is Robert Cohen, Princeton middleweight champion, 154. And then the narrator, Jake Barnes, is like, all right, well, after he got out of college, he had such a bad experience over there that he married the first girl who was nice to him. Also, not a thing you say about a friend, dude. He then had three kids, and that marriage blew up and fell apart after 5 years. So after that divorce happened, things didn't work out. Robert Cohen went over to the West Coast. He went to California, and he had like $50,000 before he got divorced, and he had like a little bit of money left on him. So he started a magazine about the arts and kind of got ingrained into the California arts community at the time. Now, as he was in the California arts community, he met a lady named Frances, who is described as like a climber, which somebody who wants to be around other people for status. There's no actual, or there's not as much genuine emotion behind the relationships they establish as there should be. So Robert Cohen gets out, middleweight boxer, has three kids, marriage, that blows up, goes out to the West Coast, meets this chick named Frances. She's a climber, but again, Robert Cohen may be somebody who's predisposed to just be like, I love you so much. Can you please fix my whole life? Because I have no idea who I am, dude. I have no idea, and you're pretty. Okay, can you please fix my whole life? Which is relatable. Especially like during my 20s, where it was like, all right, can somebody please validate me by hanging out with me? Can I please? So Robert Cohen's that guy. So he meets Francis. He's running the magazine. Magazine folds. It's too expensive. But then Francis persuades him to go to Paris to write. Because she wants to go to Paris to write. Because Paris is a, you know, it's got a great scene for writers. Also, another thing that was kind of hard to get behind in this book is that everybody is rich. Everybody's got money for days. Like, there's a couple poor people, and we'll hit this one guy who's on a bender who had no money because he's a gambling addict in, like, chapter 4. But this is all just rich people treating each other bad, you know? So that's where we're at with Robert Cohen. That's the end of chapter 1. Francis is like, let's go to Paris, come on. And the narrator, a.k.a. Jake Barnes, is the one who's telling us all this shit. And I looked up afterwards, I was like, what is the point of any of this? And allegedly the first chapter is supposed to show like the insincerity of the friendships in this book, because our narrator, Jake Barnes, a.k.a. the Hemingway character, he's telling you about, you know, Robert Cohen learned how to box and all this shit, but it's done in a tone where it's like, this isn't really your friend. You know, that's not how you... If somebody asked me to describe something about one of my friends, it would sound nothing like that. Like, you're not actually big upping your friend in chapter one. You're sort of, like, passive-aggressive shit-talking him. Like an aunt around Thanksgiving who really wants to host it at her house, but then will send a bunch of shit to her sisters, being like, I don't know if I'm saying, like, it's that passive-aggressive stuff. And I didn't understand that that was part of the message of the book at the time. I was just like, these dudes are not friends, and I kind of hate this narrator. Who am I supposed to like in this story, dude? Chapter 2, right? So Cohen, Robert Cohen, is in Paris with Francis, his wife, who is trying to get something out of him. He's friends with Jake Barnes. He writes a novel, and he's like, nice, New York City called me. I'm going to go hang out over there for a second. We're going to publish this book. We'll see how it goes. So Robert Cohen, who was insecure his whole life, that's why he learned how to box, because there was anti-Semitic feelings at Princeton. He, you know, a man of, you learn how to defend yourself and not give a shit about people. He gets called from New York City and he's like, all right, let's go hang out, right? So he goes to New York, sells his book. In The Sun Also Rises, the narrator's like, the book kind of sucked, honestly. Again, not a thing you say about somebody that you love or somebody who's in your life that's important. But this is part of the book, but I had a hard time digesting it. So Robert Cohen goes to New York City, sells the novel, and then while he's there, he gets some popularity, and he has a number of fun adult trysts with women. Robert Cohen has never been a guy who could walk into a room and know that some woman there is going to want him and want to leave with him. You know, but he gets a taste of that New York City after he sells his book. And that's big for him. So he comes back after he sells the novel and living like Cisco for, I don't know, a year or two, whatever. Comes on back to Paris and tells Jake, hey, man, I do not want to marry Francis. I don't, you know, I think I got duped a little bit. I have no desire to put a ring on her finger, especially after going to New York City and live in the thong song for like 6 months. I'm not doing that shit, okay? And Jake is supposedly his friend, but he just listens. He doesn't judge him directly to his face, but the whole book, at least the part of the book that I've read, our narrator, the Hemingway character, a.k.a. Jake, is undercutting Robert Cohen's masculinity the whole time. As like, he can't stand up for himself. Of course he doesn't know what he's doing. Of course he wouldn't want to, like, know to marry a woman. Like, he has no idea what he's doing. So, at this point in time, Cohen wants nothing to do with Paris, and he's like, I gotta go live life, dude. I just got a little taste of life. You wanna go to South America, dude? I'm telling you, I'll pay for it. Can we hit South America together? Robert Cohen's got plans, man. He's like, let's go get it, dude. What are we doing here? This is insane. The girl I'm with, I can't stand her. I don't know why I love her. I don't care about her. I was in New York City. Can I tell you what living like Cisco is like? Let's go to South America. Fuck all this, dude. Let's go. And Jake says that, like, I'm not going to South America, man. What are you talking about? That's insane. And in the book, he's like, there's South Americans here, dude. I'll meet them here. I'm not going there. That's a nice idea, but you're kind of out of your mind. That's a little too much for me. So at this point in time, when this conversation happens, Robert Cohen is bothering our narrator, main character, Jake Barnes, at his job. And they're all writers. Everybody in this book is like a writer or an artist of some sort. So they have flexible hours. So Robert Cohen is telling Jake about South America at his office. And Jake is like, I can't. Dude, that's... Come on, man. I'm working, dude. Can you please not? But Robert Cohen won't let off it. And so Jake runs his play that he runs on people when they come to his office and they won't leave him alone. Jake Barnes then takes Robert Cohen downstairs because his office is on top of a bar. And then they have a drink. And the play that has worked numerous times in the past for Jake when somebody comes and bothers him in his office is go have a drink with him. Then kind of look up and be like, all right, well, I got to go finish some notes. All right, you good to go? All right, nice, man. I'll see you later on. That was the play Jake Barnes is trying to run on Robert Cohen. Robert Cohen does not leave. He sticks around, which I understand. You're trying to hang out with your boy. He's got a lot of things going on, but, and you can't see that he's blowing you off or whatever. You still hang out. I don't know if I'm supposed to hate the Robert Cohen character, but I kind of like him, dude. So he hangs out, and Jake's like, ah, shit, he didn't leave. All right, whatever. So Jake goes back upstairs, finishes his work. Robert Cohen waits in the waiting room, and after they're done, Jake comes out, and he's like, all right, well, it's time to party, dude. Let's go get hammered. What are you doing? So then they go out in Paris, and they get blasted. They get annihilated again. That's another recurring theme in this book. I have no idea how anybody got anything done at this point in time, because every time characters interact with each other, it's like, all right, so what are we doing? Yeah, what do we got, like 4 bottles of port wine? That's fine. Yeah, dude, let's go do that. Let's get annihilated, and then we'll go walk around. That sounds good. And one of the things I thought of when I was reading is, like, when does this book take place? 1925? Stock market crash makes sense, dude. Nobody's getting anything done. You can't keep an economy afloat if everybody's hammered the whole time. Yeah, dude. 1926, everybody's like, I don't care. Even the people who are trying to be healthy still get banged up. Weird, I'm telling you, Jersey Shore. Every character is just half drunk the whole time trying to figure it out. Chapter 3, Jake Barnes starts hanging out with a French prostitute. So he goes out and he's in his mind being like, I haven't had like a nice dinner with a woman in a minute. So he goes and he finds a French prostitute named Georgette. Now, this was a problem for me when I read the book because I have a really good friend and she has a cat named Georgine. And so this character became a cat in my head while I was reading it. Just telling you. So I'm going to call her Georgine probably this whole time. She's not really in the book that much. Anyway, so Jake Barnes goes out and he's like, I miss having nice dinners with a beautiful woman, which I totally understand. And then he finds this French prostitute that also has the name of a really good friend of mine's cat. So they're hanging out. Okay. So here's the thing. They have to go and they take like a horse and buggy carriage, I think, or a car. I'm not sure. There's the characters, every time they move somewhere and they migrate to a different location, first off, it's to go get more drinks, and they also don't tell you, is it a horse and buggy or is it a car? I'm not sure. I don't know what these, it's 1925, 26 Paris when this takes place. Anyway, so Jake Barnes and this prostitute named, this cat prostitute, go ahead and go out, and in the car as they're going towards the restaurant, the cat prostitute tries to do some hand stuff with Jake. You know, I'm just guessing. It says that that the cat prostitute took a whack at him trying to have sex in the car, which can be hot for sure, especially if you're in a relationship and, you know, things are already fine. But Jake Barnes, not a fan, you know? And this is when we find out why he's a fan, or why he's not a fan, because he got injured on the Italian front of World War I. Jake Barnes, our main character, a.k.a. Ernest Hemingway, he has some type of penis injury. They don't really go into it. And when I hit this part of the book, I was like, all right, I got to Google some things. Hold on. What's wrong? This guy's got some type of injury to his genitals, huh? Okay, can I please figure out what that means? Because in the book, Jake Barnes talks about being on the Italian front and how it's kind of embarrassing to get hurt on the Italian front because nobody really respects it. And then when he was in the hospital, an Italian colonel or general or whatever came in and made a speech and looked at him and was like, this Englishman has given more than his life for this cause, meaning that he had some sort of penis injury that is going to get in the way of being sexually active in his future. I tried to look up, like, what did this dude get shot in? What happened here, man? You can't find it. I couldn't find it. I looked up, like, did he get, what part, did something get shot off? What are you talking about? And I looked it up. Nothing got shot off. Allegedly, nothing got shot off, but he also cannot perform in that context of an adult relationship anymore. And we learned that in chapter 3 because he had an injury on the Italian front. So he's hanging out with this French prostitute. All right. Trying to have a nice dinner. And this is when Robert Cohen and Frances, Robert Cohen's wife, that he definitely hates and wants nothing to do with anymore, and a couple of friends see our narrator, Jake Barnes, having dinner, and they're like, oh, hey, what's good, dude? Get over here. What are you doing? So Jake Barnes goes and meets with Robert Cohen, and they all go out dancing. Now, this is when the place they go out dancing, a lady comes in with a couple of friends, a couple of, like, dude friends. It's like one chick and, like, four, five, six dudes coming in together. And this is where we meet Lady Brett Ashley. This is the main female love interest of this whole book. And she needs a Pedialyte more than anybody I've ever known. This character, the whole time I read the book, I don't know if she sobers up and becomes a nun or something afterwards, because this book's getting zero more minutes of my life, dude. She's hammered the whole time. But the way she's described is that she's gorgeous and she slicks her hair back. It's like a 1926 flapper, very pretty woman, but also drunk the most, dude. She's the character that's blacked out the most here, and all of these people are drinking like tomorrow an asteroid hits the Earth. So Lady Brett Ashley shows up, tore up, with like four or five dudes. This is when we find out that our main character, Jake Barnes, is also homophobic, because the dude she showed up with, and this isn't directly stated, but in context clues and how Jake Barnes reacts to watching Lady Brett Ashley dance with these dudes, he says some shit, dude. He says, he's talking about like the way that those dudes move their hips and stuff. And it's pretty homophobic, man. And so Lady Brett Ashley's there. And you don't know anything about the relationship between Jake and LBA until a little bit later on. But this is just straight jealousy turning into bigotry. Because as we'll find out, LBA and Jake Barnes have some sort of thing together. But at the time when I was reading it, I was just like, yo, this narrator sucks, dude. What the fuck is this? What is this shit, dude? What are you talking about, dudes' hips and stuff and saying, like, Will you stop? I'm telling you, all these characters' likability levels are like 1.5 out of 10. So when anything weird happens, I was the quickest person to be like, man, I didn't know this character could suck even more, huh? Look at this unfolding. All right, what else happens? So they all go dancing. LBA shows up. Now, Robert Cohen has never seen LBA, Lady Brett Ashley, before, that I know of. So this dude falls in love immediately, which I also understand, you know? I think he's my favorite character. I don't know what happens at the end of the book, but at least for the first 7 chapters, Robert Cohen is my favorite character, dude. So LBA shows up. Robert Cohen's like, oh my God. He hears like French horns and a harp playing. He's like, I love it so much. Oh my God, who is she? And then LBA, I mean, they're all blasted. So Jake and LBA leave together. And then in the car, you learn that Lady Brett Ashley, aka LBA, she tries to lean into Jake. And apparently they had some sort of like prior relationship where like LBA is obsessed with Jake Barnes. Which I had a problem with, because if Jake Barnes is supposed to be the Hemingway character, I'm not okay with you writing a novel where you're the coolest dude in the room. Again, I have no faith that this is not just like a dumb guy interpretation of this book, but anytime somebody writes themselves as the number one coolest person in the story, it really turns my stomach, man. I don't know. You didn't have any other angles for it, but it's Hemingway's first novel. Again, and it's Hemingway. Who am I? I'm some idiot, dude. I probably missed why this book's important. But the Jake Barnes narrator character is definitely based on Hemingway, and he's the coolest dude in the room so much. And this is one of those examples. So after dancing, Jake and LBA leave together, and then in the car, Lady Brett Ashley confesses that, like, oh, I love you so much. Oh, I love you so much, you know? I can't be with you, but I love you. It's just hammered people talking to each other. And that's the end of chapter 3. Chapter 4. Jake and LBA make out in that car for a sec. They do kiss a little bit, but again, Jake's got a penis wound. How far are we going to go on this one? You know? So Jake and LBA make out, and LBA's like, oh, I love you so much, blah, blah, blah. And then LBA says, I feel like I am paying for all my sins of taking advantage of men when I was younger because I love you. And because you have a wound like that and you can't participate in adult activities like I would hope, I can't marry you because I'll just cheat on you the whole time. And that's hurting me so badly. And I think I'm just paying for my past sins. Yo, when I read that, I'm sorry, are you confessing that to a dude who got shot in the penis, ma'am? I mean, that sounds like a hard struggle for sure, but the guy you're telling it to got shot somewhere in the Jennies, and he can't, you know? But yeah, please keep going with how hard it is for you, ma'am. That's fine, as you whisper this into this dude's ear in some sort of either Model T or horse carriage. That's fine. I'm telling you, I had such a hard time liking any of these characters, man. So, after that happens, Jake starts thinking about his war wound after he goes home. They don't go home together because they can't go home together. And honestly, after that kind of talk, and I don't see you... If I had a penis wound and some lady said that to me, I can't talk to you anymore, man. I gotta go because your mind's so myopic on your own problems. I don't trust you to be a partner moving forward. Now, that's not in the book, but Jake just says, like, bye, I'll see you. And then he goes home. And this is when we learn about his war wound. But as soon as he's done thinking about his war wound, LBA, Lady Brett Ashley, shows up at his place. hammered and also with another dude. What is happening? What are you talking about? You just hurt this guy's feelings pretty hard, and he's not a great dude. I mean, I wouldn't call him the best friend of all time, the Robert Cowan, but you did, I would assume, crush him in that car. So this hammered lady shows up again, and she's got a dude with him, or with her. And it's like, what are you doing? Anyway, so LBA shows up. She's three sheets to the wind, dude. She's gone. She can't speak English anymore, and she's with a dude named, I'm going to give this a whack, but Count Megalopolis, I don't know how you say that. It's a bunch of M's and I's and G's. That dude's name is 19 consonants long. It's a Count Megalopolis. Anyway, this dude's role is that he is a sugar daddy, pretty much, for LBA. Lady Brett Ashley has a number of suitors, and as we'll find out, she also has obligations as far as marriage is concerned. But she's in Paris, and if nobody's looking, there's no cell phones. She's got like four or five dudes running at the same time. And Count Megalopolis is one of them, dude. So Count Meg and LBA show up at Jake's place, and Jake's like, what are you doing here? What are you fucking doing here? Why would you bring a dude to my spot? Like, it's late, man. What am I going to do? Where's that guy going to sleep? Couch? Are you going to sleep on the couch? Do you guys want the bedroom? I'm not sure what's going on here. So, when she shows up, she starts bragging about how the guy she brought, who's a count, he's super rich and he's old. He's had a lot of life experience and he just wants to be around like a pretty woman. And that's why he's kind of cuffed LBA to like be around him to make him feel young again. Again, totally understand. No, I'm not judging on that one. I understand, man. So she shows up, and she starts bragging to our narrator about, like, oh, here's the thing. I got the count around my finger. Oh, so much so. He offered me $10,000 to go to Barrett's. I don't know where that city is. I have no idea. She starts naming a bunch of cities. She showed up blacked out at the dude's house who she actually loves, and then with the dude who she's also with, and was like, you know, he offered me $10,000 to go somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? Like, we could have, I'm just saying, he also offered me $10,000 to go to this other city. Whew. And Jake Barnes is like, oh, it's pretty crazy, huh? How about that? And then he leans in and starts making out with her. And she melts because she loves him. Even with his penis wound, she's still like, this dude rocks. I'm into this guy. So he makes out with her a little bit, and I couldn't figure out whether the count was there or not for it, but the count doesn't spring on Jake at all. Like, there's no fight or anything. Like, Jake just starts making out with LBA, and that's kind of the end of it. And then LBA leaves. Chapter 5. Are you guys enthralled yet, or does this not sound like an episode of the OC? This is soap opera, man. I love that Hemingway got cuffed by the guy who made The Great Gatsby, and then this was his first book. And they got published and got paid on it because it eventually made The Old Man and the Sea in 53. But, whew, we only got 3 chapters left, guys. Come on, come with me. All right, chapter 5. Robert Cowan meets Jake for lunch, okay? Cowan is sprung on LBA. He saw her when she came to like dance and hang out. And Robert Cowan has no idea about the relationship between Jake Barnes and LBA. So Cowan goes to hang out with his boy who he thinks is his real friend. But, you know, Jake Barnes talking shit behind his back the whole time. That's not a real friend, man. And so when Cowan shows up, he's like, hey, did you see Lady Brett Ashley? Woo! She's pretty in a way that, like, you can't even predict, you know? Like, I love the zest that she has, and I don't understand if I could even be a part of her life. But, man, am I in love with her. I'm gonna try to work on it, dude. So, Jake, knowing that he has a secret relationship with LBA, I mean, they kind of get into an argument. Jake tells Robert Cohen that, like, yeah, she's a fucking drunk, dude. She's a drunk idiot who won't care about you. I don't care about her. She's, yeah, of course she's pretty and she's got style, but I can't care about her at all, dude. She's blacked out 24/7. While secretly, Jake Barnes is like, I think this is, he's so in love with her. Everybody's in love with each other here. And Robert Cohen is my favorite character because he's just out here being like, hey, do you see? She's pretty, I feel like I might want to hang out with her. And Jake Barnes lying to his face being like, well, yeah, she sucks, dude. I don't know what to tell you. What, are you going to, like, pursue her? Well, that's lame, dude. So they have an argument, but it's not a huge deal. Chapter 6. Jake has a date with LBA. Here we go, right? So they schedule to meet each other at a cafe to have more drinks, which I'm skipping over. I wanted to do a drink count for this book, at least the first 7 chapters, and try to figure out how much booze everybody had at all times. I never did it. It's hard to figure out because they say bottles of port, and then they also like specify different types of whiskey drinks. Everybody's hammered the whole time in this book, dude. So chapter 6, Jake has a date with LBA. I don't know if it was secret or not or whatever. So Jake goes to the French cafe where Lady Brett Ashley is supposed to show up. She does not show up. She ghosts him, dude. That's it. She is not there. So Jake is sitting there with his penis wound being like, all right, well, I guess it not. But I guess things are going to happen. What are you going to do? But Jake keeps it rolling, dude. So then he walks around after he gets ghosted by LBA, and then he meets a friend named Harvey Stone. Now, Harvey Stone is a guy who's involved in the writing scene with Jake. It's kind of like stand-up where, like, everybody kind of knows each other, but it's all, like, professional. Like, look, if you want to do stand-up, like, the best thing I can find is that, like, you treat other stand-ups like professional allies, more or less, where it's like, yeah, dude, we're not friends. You don't know if I have sisters or not, but like, I would love to have you work with me if you're good, and that's it. Harvey's one of those type of dudes. Now Jake goes and finds Harvey. They're at a cafe, and Harvey has been going through it. Harvey hasn't shaved for like a week. He looks terrible. He's gaunt. So Jake sits down and Harvey's like, yo, what's up, dude? I haven't eaten in like 5 days, man. I'm messed up, if I'm being honest with you. And Jake's like, what's wrong with you? And Harvey's like, I have like a gambling problem. I have no money, man. So it's been 5 days and I'm doing okay. But yeah, that's where I'm at. And so Jake gives him a handful of money. And he's like, yeah, will you eat something, dude? Look, we're not friends, but I can't see you starve out here, and you look terrible. Please eat a croissant of some type, because your face is skinny, and it reminds me of death. I don't want to look at it, okay? Here's some money. Don't fucking bother me again. At this point in time, Robert Cohen shows up just by chance. He sees Jake and Harvey hanging out, eating something, and he's like, oh, hey, I know these guys. Let's go up to them. So Robert Cohen goes up to Jake and Harvey, who are there, you know, they're sorting it out, definitely having like 900 drinks together and talking about nothing. So Robert Cohen comes up and he's like, hey, what's up, Harvey? And how you been, guys? What's up? And Harvey, has you ever been up for like X amount of days and you just lose a filter for how you talk to people, or you're pretty worn down? And you'll just tell people the truth. That's where Harvey's at right now. So when Robert Cohen comes up with like, hey, how are you? Harvey's like, yo, I hate you, dude. You suck. I can't stand that book you sold in New York was trash. I can't believe anybody bought it. Please don't talk to me anymore. And Robert Cohen just takes it. He's like, that's fine. All right, like there's a little bit of pushback, but not a whole lot. Because as I found out, one of the themes to this book is the idea of men being emasculated. That's why the narrator, Jake Barnes, has a penis wound. That's why Robert Cohen can't stand up to either the woman he's with or anybody else. That's one of, allegedly, the reoccurring themes here, is that dudes just don't know who they are. So Robert Cohen shows up, and Harvey gives him a bunch of bullshit. And Robert Cohen's like, all right, that's a little much, man. That's fine. What's your problem? And Harvey's like, I don't know what my problem is. I'm going to a different cafe. And just leaves with the money that narrator Jake Barnes gave him. So now we got Cohen and Jake hanging out. And Cohen's like, man, I don't know what that was about, right? Enter Robert Cohen's lady, Francis? Francis walks in and sits down with him. So it's Jake, Robert Cohen, and Francis at this dinner, right? Harvey Sourpuss is gone, right? Good luck to you. Go shave your face, dude. So as those three are sitting down, Francis asks Jake, like, hey, can you come over here real quick? Because I got to talk to you. And so Jake's like, yeah, that sounds great. Whatever. Let's go over here. What's going on, Francis? How's your life been? And Francis is like, I know he's a coward. I know he's not going to marry me. I'm so tired of putting up with this nonsense. I'm telling you, I hate him, dude. I can't be around him. I know he's full of shit. It's a mess. Now, when this happened, I was reading it. I was finally like, nice. Okay, I can get into some drama on this one. I'm about to witness a couple fight. I can't wait. So after Francis tells Jake that stuff in private, they both go back to the table with Robert Cohen. And Francis dresses Robert Cohen down. Oh, she goes swinging at him in a passive-aggressive way in front of his friend, in front of Jake Barnes. Jake's there at the table. This is definitely a private couple fight. But Jake's there, so we're witnessing it. Oh, she tells him all sorts of things. You gave me $200 to go to, or you gave me 200 francs to go to England. It's just because you wanted to get rid of me. And Robert Cohen just sits there and takes it, man. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. You're being kind of unreasonable right now. But Francis does not want to hear it. And Jake is in the middle of this whole thing. And eventually, after Robert Cohen gets dressed down to a certain extent, Jake's like, all right, well, obviously you guys have some sort of something to work out. I got to tell you what, I gotta go stretch these legs. I got to go. I'll see you. And so Jake Barnes leaves. The couple fight happens. Robert Cohen gets his ears beat in by Francis, who's tired of his nonsense. And Jake Barnes is just like, yeah, well, good luck with that. I don't know what to tell you. Chapter 7, here we go. Jake Barnes goes home. He's chilling. He's having a good time. All of a sudden, Lady Brett Ashley, LBA, shows up with Count Dracula again. Why are you bringing this guy to my house? How am I supposed to act with this? I can be as tolerant as I can, but you know I got a penis wound, okay? There's only so much I can put up with, ma'am. So LBA shows up, and she's gone again. I mean, this is just how she is. Somebody get her a Gatorade. I don't care what flavor it is. And if she's picky about it and says, I don't drink blue Gatorade, go ahead and tell her to drink it out of the way. Because she's out of it. She's brought Count Dracula to Jake Barnes' house again. And Jake's like, I'm just trying to sleep, dude. Can you please with this? Come on, man. So she comes up and she tells Jake, hey, last night when I showed up hammered, my bad, okay? I didn't, you know, I kind of made a poor impression on the concierge downstairs, but I got Count Dracula over here to give the concierge 200 francs, so that concierge is super happy. And there's a part in the book where the concierge tells Jake, like, hey, that woman that came in that was all hammered last night and super rude, let me tell you something. She certainly comes from a good family, okay? She is a dignified woman who had a bad night. And this is when we find out why that conversation happened. Because LBA made Count Dracula give 200 francs to the concierge as like a my bad for being completely out of my mind hammered and causing problems. But here's 200 francs. Will you please forgive me? And the concierge, I'm not sure what the hourly wage was back then in Paris in 1926, but 200 francs sounds like quite a bit. And it didn't even come from LBA's pocket. So now, up in Jake's place, LBA, hammered, redundant to even say it, with Count Megalopolis, a.k.a. Count Dracula, who's just like a soft-spoken old sugar daddy, right? And this is when we get to meet Count Megalopolis a little bit more, because LBA comes up, not in their best state to be able to talk to Jake, but lets Jake know that, like, oh, the concierge downstairs has no problem with us, you're not embarrassed, I made this dude pay him 200 francs, we're good to go, how you been? And Jake's like, I can't tell you how tired of this I am. For real. Like, you know what I'm dealing with here. You know what happened in Italy, man. What is this nonsense? Honestly, you can't keep doing this. But then LBA is like, do you want me to send Count Dracula away from you? I'll go send him to get champagne right now. Hold on, he loves getting champagne. Just a second. And he's rich as anything you can think of, dude. He's got money for days, dude. Hold on. So LBA goes and tells Count Dracula, yo, you got to go get champagne, okay? And the Count is like, I can't wait. That's great. That's a great idea. I'll go get some champagne. I also feel bad for that character, because if LBA is as hot as is described, that guy's just trying to be around a pretty woman when he's all old and stuff. So Count Dracula goes out and gets some champagne. He comes on back. I think Jake Barnes and LBA make out a little bit, but again, LBA is just saying, oh, this is when it, yo, whew, can't throw her out of your house, but man. So they make it, while Count Dracula's going to get champagne, LBA goes and makes out with Jake, and Jake's like, oh, this is nice, and LBA is like, yeah, I'll cheat on you. I would love to marry you, but honestly, with the way you are, I'll just cheat on you forever. She hits that again, dude. What a mess. And then Count Dracula comes back with a case of champagne. So it's about to be on again. They all have a nice dinner together. And this is when we learn a little bit more about Count Dracula, a.k.a. Count Megalopolis, a.k.a. Mr. 147 consonants. He's got some sort of royal title. He's got so much loot, dude. He's hanging out with LBA because she's so pretty. So he comes back with a case of the best champagne you can find in Paris. They have a nice dinner. And then they go out. Right? But before they go out, you learn about how the Count perceives the situation, because he starts talking about the key to being happy in life, because he's been through 7 different wars and 4 different revolutions. At some point in time, the Count takes off his cape and shirt. I assume he wears a cape. It's not in the book, but this dude is a Count Dracula. He takes it off and he's like, hey, I got hit twice in a war. Check this out. So he shows him the wounds that went through his abdomen and came out on his backside. And the backside wounds are about the size of the last knuckle of your thumb. He's got 2 of those on the back of him because those were arrows that went through him during his wartime. So he's much like the rest of the characters in this book who have really become warped because of World War I. And this is where we learn about how Count Meg thinks about his own life. So he shows the wounds and he's like, here's the key to being happy, in my opinion, is that you have to be able to establish your morals. One of my morals in my life is that I love, dude. And so I'm always in love because I make it a priority in my own life. And then at the end of that speech, Jake's just like, yeah, sounds good, guy who's in my house with this lady who's in love with me. Cool speech, man. Sounds good. Thanks for grabbing champagne. I don't know what that, and also, LBA is crushing champagne this whole dinner. She's getting back going. It's time to pull the cord of the lawnmower again, because the sun's about to set, and LBA has never had a night where she's not hammered. That was in this book that I know of. So she's crushing champagne, being like, hey, you want to fill this glass up again? We're about to go again. And so the last part that I read, is that LBA, Count Dracula, and Jake go out dancing, and while they're out dancing, LBA is like, you know what, I'm actually privately pretty sad, you know, and I don't know if I want to be here. And it's like, yeah, are you sad, or are you shaking because you drink alcohol every day, all day, and maybe you didn't have enough from the champagne, ma'am? Sad is sad, but also, like, withdrawal is withdrawal. So I'm not sure what happened there, but LBA is like, I'm done dancing, okay? I've had enough. I'd like to go home. So Jake takes LBA back to her place just to make sure she's safe because she is messed up. And at the front stoop of LBA's place, Lady Brett Ashley is like, hey, yeah, you can't come up because your penis wound, because you can't give me what I'd like. So, and Jake's like, yeah, that's enough, and leans in and just starts making out with her. And then Jake goes home. He doesn't go up to LBA's place. LBA goes upstairs. Jake makes out with her. She loves it. And then he goes. And as far as I'm concerned, that small makeout on a front stoop at LBA's place is the end of this book. I don't know if they go see bulls. Allegedly, this is the Hemingway book where they go to, like, Pamplona and they go run the bulls. They just go watch the bulls. I don't know. It's definitely a me problem that I couldn't finish the book, but I don't... Behind closed doors, I don't talk a lot of shit at all anymore because I don't think it's productive. It's a thing I left behind in my 20s. And this whole book kind of seems like the type of friends I had in my 20s. So maybe that's why it turned my stomach. But if anybody asked you about Hemingway, The Sun Also Rises, just give them some of that. If they know the ending, go ahead and listen to the ending. Because I don't know what to tell it to you. I'm pretty sure they go to Pamplona and they see the running of the bulls. As far as I know, I hope all of them end up with penis wounds from bulls. I have no idea. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 72 of Oral Presentations. Ernest Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises. That's all I got. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Next week's 420, and this podcast doesn't have a whole lot of ceremonies, but last year... 420 was aliens. We're going aliens again. Thanks so much for listening.